One of the major goals after World War I for American President Woodrow Wilson is this idea of self-determination. Part of his 14 points, remember that roughly? Kind of his big ideas about how to keep a lasting peace, a safe harbor for democracy. Krauss, you remember what self-determination meant?
Yeah, it was the people elect the government and something like that.
Okay, people elect the government, maybe they can create their own state. They're not having anyone else tell them what to do, correct? It's basically like the polar opposite of imperialism. Where imperialism comes in and arbitrarily sets things kind of in place, you have this kind of this leadership telling you how it's going to be. Under self-determination, people get to determine their own governments, maybe even form their own states. And what we're going to see is that the policy of self-determination was implemented inconsistently after World War I. Kenny, what does the word inconsistent mean?
Not consistent.
Wow, not consistent, very good. Now, let's just say, for example, you were chewing gum right now, and I just slapped you upside the back of the head, and then I saw Hendershot chewing gum, and I'm like, oh, Hendershot, is that gum good? And he's okay, he's a good boy. But yet I'm slapping you upside the head. Am I treating you guys consistently?
No,
I'm treating you differently, correct? So a great definition maybe for inconsistent is not treating people the same, being unfair, stomping your feet a little bit, that's unfair. What we're going to see is the policy of self-determination was inconsistent. If you were in Europe, you had a better shot of self-determination than if you were anywhere else in the world. We take a look at this map of Europe in 1920. In section 4 in your book, they have this exact same map. And they have, what does Europe look like in 1914 versus what does Europe look like in 1920? Have we ever talked about Poland in this class?
So far,
yeah, up to this point, no. Czechoslovakia? Separate countries of Austria and Hungary,
no.
Romania, Yugoslavia, like all of these, like this whole area, you see it's like a bunch of new countries. Yeah, what's up?
Where will Macedonia from?
Macedonia, somewhere in this area. Still kind of left out of that idea, right? Not quite an area. My wife's grandma, from a spot called Ruthenia. Ruthenia is like over here. Since 1900, Ruthenia has been part of like three to four different countries. So it's kind of like Macedonia is like right in this area. Kind of overtaken. Huh? Lower?
No, right on Albania.
Where at? Right here?
No.
Right. Come point. Right. Show me right where it is. Alright, so where is it taken up by? Yugoslavia right now, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess you have a passion for Macedonia because you are?
Macedonian.
But I'm going to guess there's probably some Macedonians way back in 1920 who probably wanted their own state. I'm going to guess their own nation. But there were some people who were a little more equal, treated a little more fairly than they were. So that's why you see that happen. Yeah?
What's that country over Poland? Is it Germany?
That's still part of Germany. It's kind of a weird part. It's like Germany, and then we're going to cut some of this off, and it's still part of Germany. Kind of a weird area. But we see also other states like Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. All these different states kind of work. Yeah.
Isn't Czechoslovakia split up now, like Czech Republic and Slovakia?
Yes, it is. Between 1900 and like 2000, the map of Europe is just going to constantly evolve and change. As major wars come, as the Soviet Union rises and falls, whole map of Europe begins to change. This might be an awesome map to know for the test, by the way, on Wednesday. There might be 15 places you need to know. Which 15 places? I don't want to tell you. I don't want to insult your intelligence. But just know there's going to be 15 places you need to know.
15 places? Do we have to know any oceans?
Probably. You might even have to know some seas. So in Europe, we see a better chance of self-determination, maybe not in Macedonia, maybe not in other parts of the Balkans, but outside of Europe, places like Africa, the Middle East, per se, these were German colonies. These German colonies are going to be forced to give up to both Britain and France. And what we see come in is many colonial countries, areas like Africa and Asia and the Middle East that were kind of under imperial rule prior to World War I, had hopes and dreams. They thought after World War I, hey, we participate in the war, we're going to get our freedom. Instead, rather than getting their freedom, most of these areas became mandates or areas controlled by various allied powers. Britain and France gained control of most of the area controlled by Germany in Africa. Japan and Australia, again, benefiting from the end of the war, benefiting from being on the winning side, gains most of the German areas in the Pacific. So what we see is this idea of self-determination is not realized after World War I. For some it is. For some areas it is. But even within Europe, there's some folks that were left out. Right, Anthony? Very good. And especially in Africa, Asia, the Middle East, those folks were definitely left out. So your reflection question for this one is, how was self-determination different? How did self-determination differ in Europe compared to the rest of the world?